Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to talk about how we can live a longer life and prevent a lot of diseases, specific information from respected institutions, all the literature is peer-reviewed, for example, from the University of Turin, which is in Italy, published in the Graduate Institute of International and Developmental Studies. Eating local foods will help regulate your blood pressure and reduce diabetes risk. Well, my goodness, when you consider just in the United States how many people suffer from, let's say, post-stable high blood pressure, you're looking at well north of 60 million. With diabetes, there's no exact figures because a lot of people are undiagnosed, but let's just say it's somewhere between 25 and 30 million and another 60 million who have prediabetes. Almost everyone who's overweight has prediabetes. So you're talking about well over 130 to 40 million Americans could have their lives extended and saved just by eating local and organic. That's just one of the studies we're going to rely upon today. Also, I'm going to give you some of the latest on what's happening with the environment. Today, a Category 4, the first in recorded history, hit Louisiana. And with that, very high winds, outer bands 175. That's a Category 5, but the storm itself is 150 miles an hour, which makes a Category 4. It's going to do a lot of destruction. And fortunately, it won't hit New Orleans and some of the other major cities, but it's going to cause problems. The surge is 20 feet. Just imagine looking up 20 feet on a pole and marking it, and that's where the normal water is. And that's why they say nobody could survive that if they're in it. So how is that the new norm? In fact, a Category 4 will be the new norm. Category 5s, we can expect 2 to 3 to hit the whole area, meaning anywhere in the Gulf. And all it's going to take, and I've said this many times, and being a resident of Florida, I can tell you, speaking with a lot of neighbors, if there's another Category 4 or 5 with the same devastation as the last one 2.5 years ago, they're out of here. You will see the greatest economic collapse of a state in American history because you got about 21, more or less, 21 million people. That means that those people are going to find a better place to live where they're out of harm's way. Is it beautiful? Yes. The air is clean? Yes. De-stressful? You bet. That's why it's the number one destination for people and quality of life. In fact, Marco Island and Naples are the two number one and number two cities in America people seek to be in for all the right reasons. Until you get last year's tidal algae bloom that went 40 miles out, where everywhere you look, you saw millions of dead fish. You couldn't walk on the beach. I filmed it. And manatees, these wonderful, sentient, gentle creatures, dead everywhere. Dolphins, dead. And that stench doesn't go away. But Marco is a little tiny place. You can drive from one end to the other of Marco, back and forth, in 8 minutes. And it's just some canals. No big mansion. This is a working-class neighborhood. And they have little boat docks outside. And there, in just 3 minutes, they're out in the Gulf of Mexico because they're right on the Gulf. And generally affordable housing. What do you think happens when that brackish water comes back up with all that algae bloom? That algae bloom is air in the air. You end up with severe respiratory distress. If you're an older person or a person with already pre-existing conditions like emphysema, it could kill you. That air can be toxic. So you see, we have a lot to discuss. And it starts off with this recent study. And what they found is that there's an increased consumption of foods purchased from local producers. And that led to a reduction in major risk factors linked to non-communicable diseases after just 6 months. And this was published in the journal Diabetes and Metabolism. Now, in the article, the researchers noted that the consumption of ultra-processed foods, that does not help you. That actually increases your risk of diabetes and heart disease, meaning sugared, fat-laden foods. But when you're going to the farmer's market, and you're buying fresh produce and the fruits and berries and nuts and seeds, that is what keeps you healthy. So the idea is, go to your farmer's market, eat locally grown organic produce. It's fresher, it's cleaner, meaning clean for the body. It helps you with your probiotics. That's all good. From the Molecular Markers Laboratory in Italy comes a study about zinc, simple zinc, Z-I-N-C, maybe 20 to 50 milligrams a day. In early Alzheimer's disease, it has efficacy and it's safe. Now, zinc therapy is normally utilized for treatment of Wilson's disease. That's an inherited condition that is characterized by increased levels of a bound free copper in serum and urine. And here they found that with Alzheimer's disease, where you have all these complications because of the amyloid plaque, meaning all forms of these fatty streaks in your brain, which cause the brain not to be able to function properly, zinc helps with it. So the simple message here is, take your zinc every day and help prevent Alzheimer's. From the Medical College of Georgia at the university, they found that painless magnetic stimulation of nerves that regulate muscles in the anus area and rectum improves their function and dramatically reduces episodes of fecal incontinence, which is a debilitating problem affecting almost 10% of the population. Wow. That's like 35 million people. More or less, we have around 330 million Americans. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of the American Journal of Gastroenterology. And what happens is that they have early evidence that it's called TNT, or Translumbosacral Neuromodulation Therapy. It's safe, it's novel, it's low cost for strengthening key nerves and reducing or even eliminating episodes of stool leakage. By the way, very common, especially in, ask anyone who's a caregiver for someone who has dementia. And they'll tell you, especially the sons and daughters, what it's like when you have to change your mom's or dad's linen in the middle of the night. They're unaware of it. I even had a close friend of mine who was not that old. He was 60. And he was not even aware that he had incontinence. And you become oblivious to it. Well, it's a mess. So magnet therapy can help that. And just remember, the rectum is the connector between the colon and the anus, where the stool exits. And the muscles directly involved in moving feces along, then holding it in place until we're ready to go to the bathroom, have been a focal point for treating fecal incontinence. However, the current strategies are largely unsatisfactory for at least half the patients because they do not directly address the causes, including nerve dysfunction in the anus and rectum. But the magnets worked. The magnetic stimulation to the nerves in the anus and the rectum had a phenomenal response, like a 90% positive response. That's really important. Now, for the rest of the people, they can think, oh, that's gross. Yeah, it is gross. But boy, having a solution that's inexpensive and easy, that's terrific. So magnet therapy. And by the way, people sleeping on magnetic mattress, that's good too. From the University of Siena in Italy, rosmarinic acid interferes in a reaction between amyloid beta and copper, meaning it's good against Alzheimer's. So anything that stops, limits, or helps clean up amyloid plaque is good because of protecting your brain. And in this case, let me spell it for you, rosmarinic, rosmarinic acid, and easy to get. Then also, there's some reasons why you should skip rope each day. This is from the University of Hertfordshire in the United Kingdom. It improves cardiovascular fitness. It is a form of training, good training. It improves your footwork and improves your general conditioning. and increases your heart rate and breathing, similar to if you went jogging. It lowers your blood pressure. And jumping rope will also increase your cardiovascular and respiratory fitness, which essentially means your body becomes more efficient at taking up and using oxygen. And it's a full body workout. So skipping is a full body workout. You're using your abdominal muscles to stabilize the body, your legs for jumping, your shoulders and arms for turning the rope. It therefore provides an all-over workout rather than just isolated one part of the body. It also increases your resting metabolism, which helps you burn calories even while you're sleeping. It improves coordination and motor skills. That's really good for balance and basic movement skills. It helps you prevent tripping and falling all the time. It increases bone mineral density. That's terrific. And it increases speed because jumping rope requires fast movement of the feet and arms. It's considered a plyometric exercise. This is where the muscles exert maximum force in short intervals of time with the goal of increasing power. And that's important. And it increases time, meaning relationship between what you see, your eyes, and your body movement. So it really increases the capacity for high-intensity interval training, is where you have a short bout of high-intense effort followed by a short rest intervals. And so, anyhow, it's a cool thing to do, all right? Oh, and by the way, for the younger generation, try to get your energy into something other than depression or anxiety, because teens who are anxious today, you're risking a greater likelihood of a heart attack in about 20 years. This is from Örebro University in Sweden. So we really should have, in our parenting, in our school system, dealing with stress in natural and non-toxic ways to protect ourselves from episodes later in life. We're 26 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to give you the latest on environmental news and why it's important to know this stuff. And then we're going to play the clip of this doctor who is under all kinds of attack. Isn't it interesting? A man's never been in attack in his long distinguished career. He's non-controversial, but boy, did they come after him. They're going after everyone who mentions anything that challenges the vaccine, wait for the vaccine, and wait for the new miracle drug. And in the interim, wear a mask, social distance, and wash your hands. Okay, I agree with washing the hands. I agree with masks. In fact, when I fly, I wear two masks, the shield and then the N95 to N99. I challenge them to show me the science on masks under N95 being effective except for sneezing and coughing and lessening the larger particulate matter. But if you're talking about viruses, the virus is going to go right through most masks. That's simple science. And you go into any biological laboratory in the world, and they'll show you why the protection they use blocks all outside air from coming in. They have a separate air hose that brings in fresh air from outside because they know that recycling air inside a mask is dangerous. But leave that aside. Proper hygiene, you bet. Cleaning surface areas is where you can pick up some of the droplets with alcohol or hydrogen peroxide or diluted bleach, yes. Wearing gloves when you go shopping, having an envelope with clean money you've washed so you can handle the money with that hand in that envelope that is clean, but then all the money you get in return, your change, put it in another envelope, and know that that goes in the washing machine. Seems extreme? Well, I've been doing that for decades. Ask any of my friends. You know, I don't sit at a chair. I put a napkin down. I don't sit, you know, on the table, my arms. I put a napkin down. I bring my own utensils. Because having owned three restaurants, having the background I have, I don't trust hygiene of anyone else anywhere. So these are simple, basic techniques. So that part I fully subscribe to. But that's just about it, because almost everything else we have been given either half-truths or full lies. And I'll prove that in just a moment with this gentleman. back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Just rising, I don't want to feel I'm in the wrong place to be real. Oh, when I'm longing to love you just for a night.
I'd like to welcome you. We have people listening right now all over the world. In fact, so many people have signed the petition that when he sent it over, I had to go get another ream of paper. I couldn't believe how many signatures we've received. Let me just share a few. Now, so for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, there are hundreds of thousands of properly licensed, highly credentialed, and very competent therapists, whether it's a yoga teacher, a massage therapist, whether it's a hyperbaric oxygen therapist, or a holistic dentist, a holistic nurse, holistic physician, or someone practicing Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, homeopathy, naturopathy. All of these legitimate healing therapies, and acknowledged by the peer-reviewed literature, we have hundreds of thousands of studies on our side from PubMed. I've collected them all. So that's not the argument. The argument is not, are they legitimate? Yes. Have they helped hundreds of millions of people per year? Yes, around the world. But how is it a group of people who are not qualified, not board certified, have never done a clinical study, never saw a holistic patient in their whole career, maybe nothing more than a person who has no background in anything, stays anonymous, and condemns all of this? So no effort has been successful by anyone in the field. As a result, I'm the canary in the coal mine. I'm taking on Wikipedia, and we're doing it on multiple levels. You will see the other two in just the next 6 weeks. I mean, big efforts are coming. Everybody standing by watching, and I mean a lot of people are, from all over the world, because they have been condemned and attacked and attacked and attacked as if they are in an internet gulag. This is if this is, these people are, the skeptics to me are like, it's my opinion, they're no better than people in the Inquisition in their mindset that anyone who challenges orthodoxy is heretical. And yet they have no science as legitimate on their side. That's the irony. The media supports them, Google supports them, Facebook supports them. And yet, no one's doing their homework because they censor everything that's true. So we put out a petition, and this petition is going to all other sponsors, all the people that paid their bills at Wikipedia. We got their list. They may not like the fact that we got their list, but we got their list. Here are just some of the ones that have just come in. This is a medical doctor, Dr. Ricardo Bartolim, Emeritus Assistant Professor of Family Medicine, University of Michigan Medical School. Dr. Igor Bondakento, Medical Doctor, Doctor of Science, Professor of General and Clinical Biochemistry, Northwestern Research Center of Hygiene and Public Health, St. Petersburg, Russia. One of the members of the General Medical Council of the United Kingdom. That's a big deal. Dr. Michael Cannell, Ezekiel Cardina, Thorson Professor of Psychology, Center for Research and Consciousness, Lund University in Sweden. We have Dr. Lorenzo Cohen, Professor and Director of Integrative Medicine Program. Richard Hayes, Distinguished Professor of Clinical Cancer Research at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. Dr. Callum Cooper, professor, senior lecturer in psychology, University of Northampton, United Kingdom. Professor Edward Fogarty, past chair of the Department of Radiology, North Dakota University School of Medicine. I'll give you two more here. Dr. Peter Gold, communications director, American Institute of Homeopathy, and Dr. Daniel Hedrick, American Society of Addiction Medicine. And then we have Dr. Brian Josephson, Nobel Prize winner in physics, emeritus professor of physics at University of Cambridge in Great Britain, and Robert Kennedy Jr., etc. And Sir Thomas Lucas, by the way, founder of the Lucas Foundation, and he's also the consultant to the Club of Rome. I mean, from all over the world, like 55 countries, it's pouring in. I mean, just pouring in. So we probably will end up with 10 to 20,000 names of just heavyweights. These are not lay people now. These are all heavyweights. That's how much concern there was building, but no forms and no capacity to change anything in Wikipedia. So we're doing a different strategy. So you can see our petition. You can join it and sign up. If you're a professional, just put your professional status. If you're a lay person, that's fine. They're all going, and they've been going. So they've been receiving them, even though we're still getting more. Now, the latest on some healing issues. This is from The Guardian, from today, and it says, unless we change course, the United States agricultural system could collapse. Our food supply comes from an environmentally unsustainable system that is going to unravel. So, they're saying, in this well-referenced article, and I believe they're correct, that because the Sierra snowpack is already declining rapidly for decades, there's no water on the Sierra Nevadas coming down through California, on the Great Rockies, to feed the Little Colorado, which feeds 39 million Americans their water supply in Arizona and Nevada, all of Nevada's water, and most of Southern California. Without that water, you don't have people who can live there. You don't have agriculture. You don't have industry. Are we planning on what to do? Nope. Is anyone concerned? Yeah, but no one in power. The public in California should understand, leave the state. Just leave the state. Take all the wonderful memories of a beautiful state with wonderful people, very innovative, cutting edge, very progressive. It's over. California can never return because it's forever now unsustainable. You're now locked into what could be a 40 to 400 year drought, what they're calling a historical mega drought. It's not coming back. But also through the Midwest, our corn belt and our wheat belt and our what we call the breadbasket, seven major states, it's over. You know, you're running out of water from the great Okanagan water filtration system because it wasn't just used for agriculture. Now all these big suburban developments and all these cities and industry. Too many people taking limited water and it's going. Plus you got drought and temperatures coming and you got flooding. So that's what they're saying here. So all the more reason to look where it is sustainable and start learning how you can grow your own food. This is from the University of Copenhagen today. The Arctic sea life is melting more quickly than once assumed. Quote, new study warns we have underestimated the pace at which the Arctic is melting. Temperatures in the Arctic Ocean between Canada, Russia, and Europe are warming faster than researchers' climate models have been able to predict. Over the past 40 years, temperatures have risen by 1 degree every decade, and even more so at the Barents Sea and around Norway's archipelago, where they have increased by 1.5 degrees per decade. That's for the last 40 years. This is the conclusion of a new study published in Nature Climate Change. That's one of the top three climate papers in the world. Mind you, we were telling you this 10 years ago, and now they're just saying it. Everyone who was on this program, including and especially Guy McPherson, you were right. The entire scientific community was wrong. The media was wrong. The policymakers were wrong. Stop believing the authority figures. They're wrong about everything, and this is deadly. Some very interesting news, and I'll share this with you. The Children's Health Defense legal team led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. sued Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, and three of Facebook's so-called fact checkers. Now, mind you, why is this important for you? Because let's just say today you want to find out if there's truth or not, and to what degree is it provable that wearing a face mask, any face mask, when you make yourself out of cloth or one of the professional ones, let's say N95 to N99, if it really works, Are there actual studies? You would go to Facebook and or to Google, and you would Google these things, and then there'd be articles out there. Now, then you have to look at the source, and you have to see, is this a credible source? Some are not. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet concerning the virus, and we've tried to clarify this and by bringing you voices that are responsible and professional, mainstream voices, who will tell you, for example, that hydroxychloroquine has 51 peer-reviewed studies showing that it is the single most effective thing you could do as a prophylactic if you're at risk, meaning if you're over the age of 65 and you have multiple comorbidities, you're diabetic or overweight, have heart disease or emphysema, yes, it can save your life. And of course, that would mean then there would be no need for vaccine. And younger people don't need it. It doesn't work later on, but would you find this if you went up on the internet? And would the fact checkers be honest about this? Well, they haven't been. In fact, anything that criticizes any vaccine is immediately said to be fake news, not credible, even though there are outstanding scientists and physicians who are putting up information about the dangers of different vaccines. And it's in the peer-reviewed literature. So what you have is you have some guardians of the gates of orthodoxy, the establishment, the big profiteers. And they're the ones who determine now, this is right, this is wrong, this is fake, this is real. So anything the establishment does is real. Anything anyone challenges it is fake. So here's what it is, that Robert Kennedy Jr., who I have a lot of respect for, by the way, and he signed our petition that's going to all the 500 funders of Wikipedia, and then to say stop funding it, do you really know the truth of Wikipedia? In any case, he's doing this because government-sponsored censorship and false disparagement and wire fraud. That's what he's suing for. So an online press conference will take place that details all this and or has taken place. So here's what it means. It means that in San Francisco federal court, they charged Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and three fact-checking outfits with censoring truthful public health posts and for fraudulently misrepresenting and defaming, let's say, Children's Health Defense, which is a nonprofit watchdog group that roots out corruption in federal agencies, including the CDC and the World Health Organization and the Federal Communications Commission, and exposes wrongdoing in the pharmaceutical and telecom industries. Quite simply, it is only because of voices like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Mary Holland, who left the New York University as one of her senior professors in constitutional law, and went to work for the Children's Defense Fund, both terrific human beings. It's only because of their efforts that we know the truth. And of course, then no one has him on the air. We do, of course, several times. But you won't see Robert Kennedy or Mary Holland anywhere in the media because the mainstream media is owned by, well, the deep state characters. So this lawsuit's a big deal. And if they win, it will show then that Facebook has insidious conflicts of interest with the pharmaceutical industry and its captive health agencies and its economic stakes in telecom and 5G. And Facebook currently censors Robert Kennedy's page and targeting its purge against factual information about vaccines and 5G and public health agencies. So any negative article, and I've written 13 articles against 5G, I've written 47 articles against the safety and efficacy lies about vaccine safety. So I need to say we're at the top of that list also. So good for Robert Kennedy for standing up, stepping out, and putting his reputation on the line. We really appreciate it. Now, next up, this is an important study that you're not going to hear about anywhere. But we felt you needed to have this. Thousands of Swedes receive false positive COVID results due to faulty test kits from China. This is from Reuters. And the quote is, quote, approximately 3,700 Swedes received false positive COVID-19 tests due to faulty testing kits from China, according to Reuters, citing a Tuesday statement by Sweden's public health agency, which said that the kit was unable to distinguish between a very low level of the virus and a negative result. Quote, the supplier must adjust the performance that is required for this test to be used, end quote. That's the head of the agency's microbiologist, Karen Tegmark Wissau, who added that the test kit has been widely exported to other countries. So, what's this mean? It means that, let me put this in proper context. It means that for all of the millions of people worldwide who tested positive for coronavirus, they may not have coronavirus. But the government agencies went ahead and used these false tests, and in Great Britain, as many as 47 to 51% of all tests and all deaths were labeled to corona, weren't. So people who died of heart attack and stroke and emphysema, normal things people die from, they were all called corona in the hospitals. Now they've discovered this. It's a big scandal in Great Britain. Everyone's pointing fingers at who is responsible, but the fact is that the government followed America's policy of saying, oh, this is a pandemic, and we've got to quarantine people because look at the number of deaths, and we don't want millions more people dying. But the tests were wrong, and the death certificates were wrong, and the antibody tests were not accurate. And there is no gold standard antibody test. So we have been misled about who is most likely to get it, its seriousness. Now, it doesn't mean, and I'm not suggesting, that the coronavirus doesn't kill people. It does, especially if you have comorbidities. But then that's what's unique. In Italy, when all those high death rates occurred, they occurred not all over the country evenly, and they didn't occur in all age groups evenly. That's what a normal pandemic would do, where no one is vulnerable from, you know, a plague-like condition. Instead, it was in people average age 80 years of age who had multiple comorbidities, who were in nursing homes and critical care centers, who were dying anyway, and that does not mean their death was not important to their family. Every life is important, but it meant that they were miscast and mischaracterized as COVID deaths when there was no proof of that. And later, when proper autopsies were done and proper death certificate analysis was done, they way overestimated the COVID deaths from COVID. So again, public policy was based upon false information. So I just think you got to know how bad all this is. And then there's a Nobel Prize winner who stated, and he's from Stanford University, and he said that they misstated the math, that we do not have a pandemic, that this is the death rate is about the same as the flu, and we should never have locked down. So just want to let you know that there's a lot going on out there, and we're not on the right end of the information. Also, as a separate issue, about half the world's water supply is stolen annually. This is an important article, and it's from University of Adelaide, their Center for Global Food and Resources. What they say is this, quote from The Guardian, as water scarcity increases from factories, including climate change, so do drivers of water theft, an ongoing problem in Australia. Quote, between 30 and 50% of the world's water supply is stolen each year, mainly by agricultural interests and farmers. Yet the crime itself is not well understood, a new international study led by the University of Adelaide says. The author, Dr. Adam Locke from the University Center for Global Food and Research, said there was a lack of data around water theft, partly because those stealing the resources were often poor and vulnerable and at risk of in developing countries. Quote, but theft also occurs in the developed world, especially in agricultural settings. According to Interpol, thieves steal as much as up to 50% of the world's water supply every 12 months. Compounding this problem is the fact that As the scarcity of our most precious resource increases due to climate and other challenges, so too do the drivers of water theft. This was published in the Nature Sustainability magazine. So that's serious. You know, and yet not a word about it anywhere else, you know, you're going to find that. And I think that's important. And finally, there's a good book. It's called Body Counts, a memoir of politics, sex, AIDS, and survival. And it's being talked about in the Huffington Post by Sean Strub. And it says, quote, Dr. Anthony Fauci is rewriting history. He is doing so to disguise his shameful role in delaying promotion of an AIDS treatment that would have prevented tens of thousands of deaths in the first years of the epidemic. In my book, Body Counts, a Memoir of Politics, Sex, AIDS, and Survival, I recount how slow the federal government was in publicizing the use of Bactrim, that's Bactrim, and other sulfa drugs to prevent PCP, that's the pneumonia that was then the leading killer of people with AIDS, in addition to its long-time and well-known use to treat PCP. I point to Dr. Fauci in particular because he was and remains today the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease and the head of the federal government AIDS research program. In 1987, pioneering AIDS activist Michael Callan begged Fauci for help in promoting the use of Bactrim as PCP prophylaxis and issuing interim guidelines urging physicians to prophylactic use these patients deemed at high risk. Fauci has taken exception to my account of the incident, and then it goes on to talk about how Fauci just wouldn't do it. And ultimately, nearly 17,000 people died of AIDS suffocating from PCP. Most of these people might have lived had Fauci responded appropriately. Exactly. We're going to take a break and come right back because that same Anthony Fauci refuses to acknowledge the most important, safe drug that could help people prevent older people at risk, and those in the very earliest stages of the Corona 9 virus. All right? He refuses to accept and promote hydroxychloroquine. Well, the world's greatest on the record, I disagree with many of the things that that Mark Levine has stated, but he did a good interview here, so I want to give him credit for doing a good interview, asking the right questions, but this is the real word. Yet Anthony Fauci, who mismanaged the world AIDS, causing thousands and tens of thousands of death, is right now mismanaging, in my opinion, COVID-19 and causing thousands upon tens of thousands of deaths that we could prevent if he simply advocated for hydroxychloroquine. Now to that interview.
As you've looked, I take it, at all these studies, and what do you conclude?
I conclude the evidence is overwhelming. There's no question that in the people who need to be treated and are treated early, it has a very substantial benefit in reducing risk of hospitalization or mortality. And there's been a massive disinformation campaign that stretches from the government to the media that's either suppressing this message or it's countering it with a false message. And I'm not an expert in the reasons why that's happening other than just observing it. But I am an expert in the science, and I can tell you the science is all one-sided. In fact, the science is so one-sided in supporting this result that it's stronger than anything else I've ever studied in my entire career. The evidence in favor of hydroxychloroquine benefit in high-risk patients treated early as outpatients is stronger than anything else I've ever studied. So scientifically, there's no question whatsoever.
And most of the studies that are cited by the government scientists and the media are studies that do not treat patients early in the virus. Is that correct?
It's either that they cite studies that are hospitalized patients, or they cite studies such as the Bulwer studies from Minnesota that treat low-risk patients. These are people under age 60 with no chronic conditions and so on, people who will survive the virus with just on their own without treatment almost entirely. And those people, virtually nobody's hospitalized, so there's no room to do better when the people who don't get the medication are already doing as best as one could hope. So those are low-risk people, and we're not talking about treating low-risk people. We're talking about treating people over 60 or with chronic conditions or obesity, diabetes, and so on. Those are the people who are at risk of being hospitalized and dying from this illness. Those are the people who have to be treated. And all the studies, every one of the studies that looks at that group of people has shown benefit. There are no studies in those people that show lack of benefit.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, he's been in the government 52 years. He heads the infectious office in the federal government for a very, very long time, really over three decades. And when he's asked about this during testimony, he absolutely blows off hydroxychloroquine. He says the science is the science. You tell us the science says yes. He says no. Has Dr. Fauci ever called you and asked you your opinion and why you have the opinion that you do?
No. Dr. Fauci has...
And you're renowned. I've done research on your background. You're a renowned expert. You're at one of the top schools in America. Let me ask you this. Has the head of the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, ever contacted you and asked you about your review of these various studies?
He's not contacted me for that purpose. During the time when the FDA was considering a petition for early use authorization in outpatients of hydroxychloroquine that was submitted by the Henry Ford Hospital doctors, during that time, I filed a brief with the FDA demonstrating both the evidence that supports usage and the complete lack of harm, the complete lack of any systematic data that the FDA has said on their website that they don't have. Just reading what they say on their website shows that they have no data about adverse events in use in outpatients. He responded, I sent him this by email as well as FedEx, and he responded thanking me for that. That is the only contact I've had with him.
So none of the heads of these various government entities have bothered to consult with you. And basically, when you go on these various media programs, particularly on CNN, they spend most of the time reclaiming their time and interrupting you and making it impossible for you to explain why you have the position that you have. And when we come back, I want to spend a little bit more time looking at these studies. We'll be right back.
Described by a doctor who's actually following the patient, knows what to expect, and is able to monitor it. And all medications should be used that way, and this is no different. But in general, this is a very safe medication. The medication itself has, in some people, perhaps 10% of normal people, can change the pacing of the heart muscle contractions, called the heart rhythm. That change has only measurement value. In other words, if you measure it on an electrocardiogram, you can see it. It has essentially no bearing for almost everyone who has that as to any risks for a real arrhythmia that has potentially life-threatening consequences. It is a very, very, very low risk.
It's interesting you should say that. On May 15, the Washington Post, drug promoted by Trump as coronavirus game changer increasingly linked to deaths. That was the headline that was blared. Is that true? It's increasingly linked to deaths? And what's their data for this?
First of all, it doesn't say in which patients. If you're talking about very sick hospitalized patients who get it as a last-ditch effort because nothing else is working, then there might be some relationship like that. If you're talking about healthy outpatients who are getting it among the 10 billion people who've gotten this over the last 65 years, there's no relationship at all. And so you have to be very specific about who you're talking about when you make statements like that.
You know, again, as a pedestrian, no expert, but I read the various reports, I read what you write, and I draw my own conclusions from this. It is incredible to me that in the middle of this pandemic, that a drug that has been used for over half a century, where the testing has been so thorough and it's been ubiquitous, and it's so cheap, each pill is very, very cheap, that there is this effort to fight it and to destroy the doctors and the experts who dare to suggest that in the early stages, or even maybe as a prophylactic, you might want to use this if it's prescribed by a doctor. Now pharmacists are afraid to provide it. And now doctors are concerned to prescribe it, and hospitals, some hospitals won't prescribe it. And this has been politicized in an incredible, incredible way. And you write here, wait a minute, this drug can save thousands and thousands of lives. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Never, never.
Okay, there is, he's an MD, PhD. He's published over 300 articles in the peer-reviewed literature. He's a top professor of immunology at Yale, and he's on the board of several major scientific and medical publications. Now they're attacking him because he took the time to review all of the scientific literature, found 51 outstanding studies showing it is safe and effective and saves lives, and yet it's being attacked. So that just shows you how almost everything today, if it can be used politically, it will be. They politicized coronavirus, and now they've weaponized the protocols. Something that could save lives is not being used. We keep, you know, bringing forth people who are the best in the field and not alternative field. I'm not bringing you any alternative doctors. All these are mainstream scientists, and they're speaking out. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this. Now I'm going to play you just 2 minutes of a clip. If you would like to call in, I'd like to hear your points of view. Do you believe that New York City is dead? Do you believe that it will revive and come back in a positive way? Or do you believe that it will survive as it looked like it would survive under a beam back in 1970 until Ed Koch came in and then have a rejuvenation? Do you believe there'll be a rejuvenation, or has the metrics changed? Have the working class people given up on New York because it's been so inhospitable with its high taxes, its high rents, the unforgiveness of the landlords in squeezing people? What are your thoughts? Is it worth living here anymore? 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about calling in, and we'll take those calls, let's just play a short clip of the person who wrote the article, New York's Dead and is Going to Stay Dead. We'll listen to about 2 minutes of him.
Welcome back. New York City is dead forever. That is the title of a recent op-ed by author and entrepreneur James Altucher, who writes this, quote, "I love New York City. When I first moved to New York City, it was a dream come true. Now it's completely dead. But New York City always bounces back. No. Not this time, but New York City is the center of the financial universe. Opportunities will flourish here again. No, not this time. New York City has experienced worse. No, it hasn't." Joining me right now is the author himself, James Altucher. James, thanks very much for being here. You are a longtime New Yorker, and you love this city, but you've left. Why do you think New York City is dead and won't come back?
Well, Maria, first off, thanks for having me on the show. Second, right now, there's a major problem. Tax revenues are going down, deficits are going up. Something like a third or more of restaurants and small businesses might already be permanently closed in New York City. Apartment vacancies are an all-time high, and they're going to get higher. Something like 1 in 4 residents have not been paying rent since March, and who knows, you know, how many more vacancies there will be. And the city has already even said the deficits are so high, they're going to have to start laying off critical employees like the EMTs, who are frontline workers, teachers, police, garbage collectors, MTA workers. This is a serious problem. You can't run a city with your revenues going down and deficits going up and all the citizens leaving. And I haven't left permanently. I'm coming back. I have kids in school in the city. I want the city to recover, but I don't see how it physically happens when every business is closing and many citizens are leaving.
Jerry Seinfeld is taking you to task. The comedian is slamming you in the New York Times, writing this. You say New York will not bounce back this time. you will not bounce back in your enervated, pastel-filled new life in Florida. I hope you have a long, healthy run down there. I can't think of a more fitting retribution for your fine article. This stupid virus will give up eventually, the same way you have. We're going to keep going with New York City, if that's all right with you, and it sure will as hell. It will sure as hell come back. You're out with a new op-ed today with your response. What do you make of Jerry Seinfeld pushing back at you?
Well, I mean, he's, you know, loves the city and is concerned about any criticism, but I don't know why he had to personally attack me. I live in New York City as a permanent resident, and I want it to do well, but the facts are the facts. Again, apartment vacancies are at an all-time high, not temporary high. People have left permanently. People are moving companies. They can't even respond to all the calls. And office buildings are empty. Even though people are allowed to go back to the office, many companies are going remote permanently. That means declining taxes. The restaurant closings means declining tourism, which also means declining revenues for the city. Deficits, again, are going through the roof because of the virus, understandably. So I don't, again.
Okay. Interesting. I thought we had had some people call in on this. We don't. So I'm going to share my views on this. Now, we're going to say goodbye to our WBAI audience because they have to have the last 5 minutes of their show. So we're going to continue. You can go to prn.fm and I'll go right up to the end of the hour. So for BAI audience, thank you for tuning in today. And by the way, I had a conversation last night with the station manager, Berthold Reimer, and we had a late night conversation, and I gave him a suggestion. And I'll tell you what that suggestion is tomorrow. It will affect this program. It could affect other programs. But I just believe that the station, to survive and thrive, has to have a whole new energy. And I believe that all of us who've been on the air for more than, let's say, 5 years, 10 years, we should make way for young people to come on and make it more community-oriented. And I said I would be the first person to volunteer my program so that new, younger energies can come on and help the audience and help the station. That's one of the most important things I think we could do, because we've got to get a whole new audience or the station that's not going to survive. Anyhow, I don't believe the station will survive in the next 12 months because Pacifica's political backstabbers are out at KPFA. They want to get rid of BAI, and that's unfortunate. It does not deserve this kind of contempt that it's held in within the arcane and Byzantine world of Pacifica. But it still has one last chance, and let's hope that I'll go into this in greater depth tomorrow. So thank you for listening to BAI today. Now, here are my thoughts. I think New York is just one of the greatest places in the world to be, and I've been all over the world. It has such a diversity of culture, great minds, creativity, love the attitude of the people. You don't have to worry about them telling you what they think. They'll tell you what they think. You can accept or reject it, but they're brutally honest. They're also very thoughtful, and there's a great sense of community. What the big problem is, it has to be changed, and it must be changed, are landlords. The landlords have caused so much of the problem, and the developers. It's not based upon race, it's based upon class. There's been this whole idea, and Trump started it with getting around $80 million tax abatement for his Commodore Hotel back in 1970. He was unknown until that time. But then once that worked, and it was really his wife, Melanie Trump, who did all the gold and the chandeliers and made it into the Hyatt there on 42nd Street. Then he did it with Trump Towers, and again he sued Mayor Koch, and he won. Koch hated him, and for all the right reasons. But then again, it became not a building for the people, for affordable housing, for working class people. It became for the rich and those professionals who wanted to have a place they could brag they could live. And what happens is that now you have three New Yorks. You have the rich and powerful in their whole, you know, Park Avenue, Billionaire Row, and down at Hudson Yards and other places, little conclaves around the city. And only if you're rich, but all the neighborhood around that also, everything goes up. If you're a restaurateur, suddenly your rent goes up. And you're also paying the landlords real estate taxes. This is not everywhere else, and that's unfortunate. So we've got to stop the corruption within the city council, which is endemic, in beholding itself to the landlords, and bring the rents down big time, and let businesses survive, and give them a break, because there have been no breaks even before COVID. 24% of all the storefronts in New York were empty, and no one was going to take their place. Now it's like 65%, and it's going to get worse. So when retail cannot afford to be in an environment like New York, and tourism is going to be adversely affected, and Lincoln Center and Broadway and all the things that make it so unique and special are locked down, and movie theaters, you can't fill up a movie theater now because of spacing. No movie theater is going to open where you have one seat, then you void four seats and another seat. They'd go bankrupt. So we've got to change everything about the cost of living in a city. And that means you start with the landlords, you start with a whole new form of rent control, then you make it affordable for the working class person, because it's the working class person that is the victim of all of the politics today at every level. It's not about race. That's a false agenda. It's about class. So the working class is being destroyed. They're the victims of everything today, unfortunately, of all colors within that working class. So make New York what it once was, a working class city with all of its suburbs and all of the boroughs where the rich can live, but they're not controlling everything. If you can't do that and you can't make it an affordable environment, then it is dead in what we know. Now, will people come in time and take those 67,000 apartments? Yes, they will, or the city will fill them up. But what was once a vital heartbeat will no longer be a vital heartbeat. Cities like New York do not go down easily. But take a look at Los Angeles over the last 10 years, and San Francisco over the last 5 years, and Portland over the last 3 years, and Seattle over the last 3 years. That's New York, except it'll be at a faster, more accelerated rate. That's my thoughts. Let's say hello to Colleen from New York. Colleen, your thoughts? Oh, Colleen, Keith, sorry you hung up. Well, maybe you can call in tomorrow. In any case, let's hope it survives for the benefit of all the people who've been here their whole lives, and for the people, the artists, and all the great minds and the great creative talents that we benefit from by having them in our presence, so we can enjoy everything that they do that makes life more enjoyable for us. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.